All right, good morning. Go ahead. If you brought your Bible this morning, I'm going to ask you to turn with me to the book of Joshua, the book of Joshua, chapter 5. Now, last week we saw in chapter 4, we saw Joshua order the men to pick up these large stones from the River Jordan as they crossed over. And the idea was to take these stones and to set them up in such a place and in such a way that their children might one day ask them, what do these stones mean? And that was to provide an opportunity from one generation to share with the next generation God's faithfulness, God's provision, God's protection, and God's power. This was an opportunity. This was God setting up a moment for the generations of Israel to be able to share with the next generation, the generation to follow them, to share with them what they had seen God do. And that's such a beautiful thing. It's one of the benefits of being part of a church family is you're not just in a group of people, your own generation. You have generations before you and generations after you. You have people to relate to you stories of their experience, of what they've seen God do. And you can be encouraged by their experiences. And it's an opportunity for you to remind the generation following you of what God has done. What do these stones mean? And near the end of the message last week, we were reminded that Israel crossing into the promised land, that actually Israel has been here before. Israel had come to the very threshold of the promised land. They had walked themselves up to the border only to turn away in fear 40 years before this moment in Joshua 4. They had sent spies into the land, and those spies were fearful. They were terrified of what awaited them. Two of those spies, Caleb and Joshua, returned with joy. All right, they came back and they said, guys, the land is flowing with milk and honey. This place is awesome. The cities, yes, the cities are strong and the walls are fortified and they have strong defenses. But listen, we get to see God fulfill His promise. So let's go. We get to see the Lord move ahead of us and do what He said He's going to do. But 10 of those spies came back fearful. They came back afraid. And their response was, yeah, the land is flowing with milk and honey, but those cities are strong, and their defenses are strong, and their walls are fortified, and there are giants in the land. So let's go back, because if we go forward, we're just going to die. Let's go back to what God has already led us out of. In response to their fear, in response to their disobedience, in response to their lack of faith, God turned them around and led them through the wilderness for 40 years. He led them around the desert until that entire generation had died. All but those two spies that brought back that one report. And one of those two spies, Joshua, he was the one who would lead them into the land. And now, Joshua 4, they've crossed into the river. They have stepped into what's next. And in that moment, God gives them a command that, let's be honest, is going to seem a bit strange to us at first glance. Would you stand with me as we read together, beginning in Joshua chapter 5, verse 2. Joshua 5, beginning in verse 2, says, at that time, the Lord said to Joshua, make flint knives and circumcise the Israelite men again. Aren't you glad you came here this Sunday? So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the Israelite men at Gibeath Ha'aralot. This is the reason Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt who were males, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness along the way after they had come out of Egypt. Though all the people who came out were circumcised, none of the people born in the wilderness along the way were circumcised after they had come out of Egypt. For the Israelites wandered in the wilderness 40 years until all the nation's men of war who came out of Egypt had died off because they did not obey the Lord. So the Lord vowed never to let them see the land he had sworn to their ancestors to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. He raised up their sons in their place. It was these Joshua circumcised. They were still uncircumcised since they had not been circumcised along the way. After the entire nation had been circumcised, they stayed where they were in the camp until they recovered. The Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the disgrace of Egypt from you." Therefore, that place is still called Gilgal, which means rolled away today. Father, give us eyes to see, ears to hear, and hearts to receive what you have for us in your word today. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. This is the moment they've been waiting for. They are there, right? Imagine, you've been told, while you were a child, your parents walked up to the edge of the promised land only to then turn around, and for 40 years you've wandered around. And so now here you are, a fully grown adult. And you've crossed into the land that your parents refused. You're there. You're in the promised land. It's right in front of you. The promise is within reach. You have all of the momentum. God has proven his power. God has proven his care for them by stopping the river. They've crossed the river with dry socks. And verse 1 says that word got around the area. When all the Amorite kings across the Jordan to the west and all the Canaanite kings near the sea heard how the Lord had dried up the water from the Jordan before the Israelites until they had crossed over, it says, look, they lost heart and their courage failed because of the Israelites. So God is showing off and people are noticing. This is great news, right? If you're Joshua, you're thinking, they're disheartened. They've lost heart. They've got no courage. Let's go. Let's take the city. Let's do this. God has already commanded you to be strong and courageous. How many of you have done that Bible study? God's already commanded you to be strong and courageous. This is your moment. Let's go. If there was ever a moment when Jericho, the first city that they would come to, if there was ever a moment that the people of Jericho were disheartened and afraid, it's this moment, right? But that's where God says, stop. Stop right here. And maybe you'd think this is where the Lord would make sure they're ready for what's next, right? Stop. Let's make sure your swords are nice and sharp, right? You'd think this is where the Lord is trying to get them all on the same page. Stop. Let's formulate a strategy for success. Or maybe they're of a certain generation and they expected God to say, stop. Collaborate and listen. You either get that joke or you don't. There is no middle ground. That's okay. But instead, God says, stop. All my kids just had a very cringe moment. I could have said, stop, in the name of love. My wife just said, just stop. But instead, God says, make flint knives. Make flint knives. Now, here's the thing. They know that flint knives are not for their enemies. Flint knives aren't weapons of war. Flint knives are for something a bit more sensitive. Flint knives were for circumcision. If you think back with me to Father Abraham, when God makes a covenant with Abraham, he gave Abraham a sign, right? He gave Abraham a mark to remember that covenant. Every Jewish male was supposed to be circumcised on the eighth day. Now, circumcision wasn't exclusive to the Jewish people in that time, nor is it exclusive to Jewish people today. But it was unique in the sense that for the Jewish people in this time, circumcision wasn't merely a physical thing. It represented something far more significant than just the cutting away of flesh. It represented the covenant relationship between God and his people. And in fact, Genesis 17, as the Lord was initiating this covenant with Abraham, listen to what God said. He said, if any male is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that man will be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. So, what does it say then that these men who have just lifted stones out of the river, crossed over into the promised land, these men, raised by the generation that had fled Egypt. So these are the children of the generation that had crossed the Red Sea. These are the children of the generation that have seen water flow from the rock, that have seen Israel led by a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire. This is the generation that saw the glory of the Lord descend upon Mount Sinai as Moses received the Ten Commandments. This is the generation raised by that generation. Like if any generation should have faith, if any generation should be encouraged to follow the Lord with their whole heart and with their whole selves and with their whole mind, it's this one. But the fact that it says these men who have crossed into the promised land need to be circumcised means they weren't. They hadn't been. In fact, it's a demonstration of God's grace to his people in that he maintained his covenant with them even in their disgrace, even in their disobedience, because he had already said, if anyone isn't circumcised on the eighth day, that person is cut off from my people. So it's a grace of the Lord that he's still with them, even in their disobedience. But I want you to see here that God doesn't allow that disobedience to go unchallenged, and he doesn't allow that disobedience to go without confrontation. And so here they are in this moment of transition. They've crossed into the promised land. God doesn't command them to charge. It's not time for them to go and conquer the city. He tells them to stop and to renew their covenant with him first. If you're taking notes, this is what I want to encourage you to write down. God doesn't care about your success. He cares about your heart. Maybe this is more palatable. Maybe we can read this and we're less like, wait a second, if we write it this way, God is less concerned about your success than he is your heart. Is that easier for you to hear? God cares, but he mostly cares about your heart. It's a challenging thing to consider. Sometimes the greatest obstacle, the thing that's in the way for what God has next for you, has nothing to do with what's in front of you. It has everything to do with what's still in you. Here Israel is, ready to move forward. But God knows that their readiness only extends to their hands and it doesn't reach their heart. So before God gives them victory, he calls them to check their hearts and to renew their covenant with him. He calls them to check their hearts and to renew your commitment, renew your covenant with him. So as University Baptist Church begins to step into this next chapter, it's absolutely necessary that we take the moment to pause and to consider our hearts. And even saying that out loud, I need to clarify, I'm not saying that with any degree of criticism, and I'm not saying that with any degree of complaint. But for a lot of us in this church, we get so wrapped up in progress, we get so caught up in what's next, we get so caught up in moving forward and looking for what God is doing for us and looking at what God is doing through us, that we miss out on what God is doing in us. Whatever Joshua and the people of Israel were expecting God to lead them to next, I am pretty sure this wasn't it. But that's kind of the point, right? When you think about it, that makes sense. This would not have been top of mind. Because that they were in need of this circumcision proves that it simply had stopped being a priority for them in the first place. Not to them, but it mattered to God. Look at verse 4. This is the reason Joshua circumcised them. I love it when the Bible just goes, hey, dummy, I'm going to give this as clear to you as I can, right? And it feels like Joshua over-explains this to me. Maybe that's just me. I'm just reading it. It feels really over-explained. But that's because God is trying to make this very, very clear. All the people who had come out of Egypt who were males. It's not saying that all the people who came out of Egypt were males. He's saying of those who came out of Egypt, the ones who were males, all the men of war, so they were of fighting age. That's where God draws this generational line. They had died in the wilderness along the way after they had come out of Egypt. Though all of the people who came out were circumcised, he's referring to the men, none of the people born in the wilderness along the way were circumcised after they had come out of Egypt. So they stopped this practice when they left Egypt, is what he's saying. For the Israelites wandered in the desert 40 years until all the nations, men of war, who came out of Egypt had died off because they did not obey the Lord. They refused to enter the land. They heard the 10 spies' reports that, yes, the land was flowing with milk and honey. Yes, the land was a land of plenty. It was a land of everything. It was a land of opportunity. But the problem was they were terrified. So they turned around. And God led them along for 40 years in the wilderness. And God vowed never to let them see the land he had sworn their ancestors to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. He raised up their sons in their place. The sons are now, had just crossed the river. It was these sons born on this side of Egypt, on this side. These sons were still uncircumcised, since they had not been circumcised along the way. Often, the reason God stops us in our tracks, often the reason God prevents us from taking the next step, I need you to hear me, has nothing to do with what's next. It has everything to do with something we've missed. Sometimes it has nothing to do with what's in front of us. It has everything to do with something we've neglected. You might even write it down like this. Here's the second thing. God is calling you to face what you've been ignoring. God is calling you to face what it is that you've been ignoring. That previous generation, again, that generation that left Egypt, they had the sign of the covenant. Here's the thing. You'll remember, one of the last things that God does in Egypt is send the plagues, right? And what's the last plague? The angel of death. The killing of the firstborn, which commemorates what? Passover is commemorated by Passover. Passover is the remembrance that God had told them, if you put the lamb's blood on the door, the angel of the Lord will pass over you. And so when they take the Passover meal on an annual basis, on a yearly basis, when they eat that Passover meal, it is a remembrance of that angel of the Lord, of God's grace and protection of them. Here's the thing. You couldn't participate in the Passover meal if you were of age and not circumcised, because that was a demonstration that you were cut off from God's people. So the generation that left Egypt, they had the sign of the covenant. But this generation, standing in the promised land, didn't. For 40 years, it wasn't done. For 40 years, it was neglected. I need you to think about that. For 40 years, they just stopped. Think about everything that generation had seen. They had seen manna from heaven. They'd seen water from the rock. They saw God lead them with a cloud and with fire. And still they neglected something God had clearly commanded them to do. But this wasn't outright rebellion, right? Like, at no point did they pass a resolution, we just won't be doing that anymore. No, it was quieter than that. They just stopped. It was neglect. A little drift. A little delay. I know it says on the eighth day. Maybe we'll just do it a little bit later. We'll just put it off a little longer. And over time, what would have once been unthinkable just became the norm. Just became normal. Listen, you don't have to reject God in order to drift from Him. You just have to delay that obedience a little bit longer. When has that ever happened in your life? I'm not talking about the big obvious sin. No, I'm talking about that thing in your life that you just let slide. You just found an excuse for. You just found a reason not to deal with it. Maybe it's a habit that you used to protect, you used to guard, you used to do this regularly, and then slowly but slowly that daily regularity has just kind of gone to the side. And now you don't do it more often than you do it. Maybe it's a discipline you used to practice. Maybe it's a conviction that you used to hold. You didn't walk away overnight. You just stopped. And you stopped paying attention. And now here you are, standing in a new season, carrying with you old disobedience. And God, in His grace, says, we're not going to move forward like this. So God leads them to renew their covenant with Him, to return to Him with their whole hearts and not just with their words. I love what it says in verse 9. Verse 9, He says, today I have rolled away the disgrace of Egypt from you. Don't miss that. Like, don't miss that. They've been out of Egypt for decades. Egypt is so far in the rearview mirror, it's unbelievable. But Egypt isn't out of them. They've been delivered physically, but now they're being renewed spiritually. They were free, but they were still carrying the weight of who they used to be. And God says, listen, that shame, that disgrace, that fear, it ends today. It ends today. If you're taking notes, I'd encourage you just to write this down. Renew your commitment to Him. And He will remove your shame and restore your identity. Renew your commitment to Him. He will remove your shame and restore your identity. Some of us have stepped into new ground wearing old labels. I remember when we were kids in high school, how important those letter jackets were, right? Anybody still have theirs? Yeah, some of us do. Those letter jackets were everything. Got your patch, right? Had big G for Garrison, right? I had like the football on there. I had baseball on there. Never mind, I didn't letter in either of those. I lettered in band, but I got a little patch for that. I had like playoff patches down one arm and Allstate choir down the other arm. On the back, it said, Norman. Yeah. And I wore it my senior year. It didn't matter. It was 112 degrees. I wore it with a t-shirt. I was going to wear my letter jacket. And then I got to college. Do you know what's not cool? Wearing your letter jacket at college. That's a good way to get bullied, actually, now that I think about it. Some of us have stepped into college rocking our letter jacket. We've walked into a new season wearing old labels, still thinking we are who we used to be, still carrying shame that Jesus has already paid for. Some of us have walked into a new season still defining ourselves by a past that God has already forgiven. And God is saying, listen, if you're going to walk into what's next for you, you don't get to take that with you. You don't get to carry that on your back or on your shoulders. This isn't, this command that he's giving Israel here, this isn't just about a physical act. This is something deeper. This is something far more important. You see, God has always and only ever been about your heart. And ultimately, Jesus came to do so much more than just to change your behavior and change the way you look. I worry that sometimes we think that Jesus is just a way of life. It's not. Jesus came to change who you are entirely. He came to change your identity. Israel had already crossed the river. They have entered into a new season, but before they can go conquer Jericho, before they can take the land, they have to renew their commitment to God. They can't move forward until they renew their commitment to God. And that's exactly what we're going to do together here in just a moment. You see, we live in the New Testament side of things. Circumcision is not our sign. The initiating rite of Christianity is baptism, which represents a spiritual circumcision, what's called the circumcision of the heart, which isn't done by human hands, it's only done by the Spirit. Baptism is the initiating rite. That's how we mark the beginning of our relationship with God. And that step of obedience is the first of a lifetime of obedience. And the Lord's Supper is the renewal sign, the renewing sign of us remembering our commitment to God. And each time we take the cup, and each time we take the bread, God calls us to step back and to take stock. Where am I in this moment in my relationship with God? Is there something in my life that God is calling me to cut away? Is it a sin that I've tolerated? A habit I've justified? A step of obedience that I've put off just a little bit longer? I'm going to ask the worship team to begin making their way up. Listen, as they do, it's necessary that we take a moment and examine our hearts. One of the reasons we do that individually is because the Lord's Supper is in and of itself a communal experience. So that word, so we call it the Lord's Supper, right? It's also called communion. You can even hear communal, communion. Communion simply means participation. So the Lord's Supper is a group project. It's not an individual thing. It's something we do. It's something we do together as a church. It's a meal that is shared by the church family. And so before University Baptist Church can renew its commitment to Jesus, every member of University Baptist Church has to renew their commitment to Jesus. So that's what we're going to do in this moment. The worship team's going to lead us in a song, and as we sing, we're going to examine our heart. Is there any disobedience? Is there any delayed obedience? Is there any neglect in your life? or in your relationship with Him that you need to resolve? Listen, maybe you're here and you don't actually need to renew anything. You just need to be made new. You need salvation and forgiveness that only Jesus can give. So the beautiful thing is, this is your invitation too. As we sing and as the Spirit leads you, you can pray at your seat. You can pray at the altar. I'd be honored to pray with you. Be honored to pray for you and encourage you as you stop putting things off. So as we sing, let's call out to Jesus and cut away whatever is holding us back from stepping forward into obedience and with joy and with confidence.